Well, as we indicated in the introduction, we're going to spend a little time talking about Connecticut's environment and environmental quality and what's being done about it. And we're so pleased to welcome the newly named director of the CEQ, the Connecticut Council on Environmental Quality. Pleased to bring Timothy Bishop. Tim Bishop's on the program this morning. He's also a longtime conservation professional and currently the Fairfields Conservation Department official. So we're going to be talking to him about this great organization, which was created way back in 1971. And under this Connecticut Environmental Policy Act, the council reviews environmental impact evaluations that state agencies develop for major projects. They also publish something called the Environmental Monitor, the official website for state project information under the Policy Act and for notices of proposed sale or transfer of state-owned lands. And they also participate in studies and working groups on environmental issues as directed by the state legislature. So lots to talk about. But first, let's meet Mr. Bishop. Tim, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, John. Appreciate you having me on.
We are going to jump into the conversation. We just want to remind folks about this important issue. Well, summer's on the way, and folks are digging it, along with planning various projects that may require digging or excavating around your property. So that means making a call to 811. Call before you dig. In Connecticut, it's the law, and it could save you or your contractors a huge headache or even a possible life or safety threat. Always call 811 a few days before any digging project, like planting trees, installing fences, or building decks, so you can have your underground utility lines marked for free. It can prevent dangerous, costly, or even fatal hits to gas, water, or electric lines. It is a legally required free service that protects you from liability. All you need is a couple days advance notice before digging and one call before you dig to 811. All right, Tim, once again, appreciate your being with us this morning. Congratulations on your elevation to becoming the director of the CEQ relatively recently, right?
Yes, it's only been about a month or so. I've been serving the council for about a year and a half now. And coincidentally, coming full circle, I was, during my undergrad studies, was an intern for the council.
Wow.
My name is in the annual report from 2001. So,
that's fantastic.
Complete story.
But also, it seems, chatting a little bit before we went on mic, you've really got, kind of conservation and preservation of our environment kind of in your DNA. You're wired for this kind of stuff.
Yeah, I'm fortunate to have been in the industry, both on the environmental side, investigations and remediation side in the private sector for about two decades, while I was running a parallel track in natural resources before I got involved as conservation director for the town of Fairfield. I'm also elected in my hometown of Ridgefield and serving as vice chair of the Inland Wetlands Board for the town, too. So I do a lot of environmental work day and night.
Yeah, but that's an amazing array of, of opportunities for somebody like you. When you're able to serve your own hometown, applying all of the incredible information you have access to and have learned in other capacities, while at the same time being able to bring that expertise to serve another important community, and I say that because of its abutting Long Island Sound. So that brings an entire different realm of environmental concerns, challenges, and opportunities, if you will, than a town like Ridgefield. But then also being elevated to being able to apply that expertise to benefit, our entire state and all our taxpayers. Man, that is you're kind of living the sweet spot right now.
Yeah, thank you. I'm passionate about the environment. Obviously, been doing it my whole life, and I'm fortunate to be appointed to the council, but also elected in my town, and fortunate to have this job in Fairfield as a day job. So you know, I appreciate and the opportunities and work with a lot of different people in different sectors, you know, all kind of with the same goal.
Yeah.
Whether it's state level or local level, you know, environment's number one for me.
Yeah.
And fortunate enough to be the only member on the council representing Fairfield County. So, you know, I appreciate that as well.
Yeah, yeah. Well, to be able to showcase a little bit about the intricacies of and how diverse those intricacies are when they're maybe only scant miles away. I know your passion is wetlands. Could you give an example of the kind of challenge a town like Ridgefield might be facing environmentally in regards to wetlands versus a town like Fairfield?
Yeah, obviously there's a lot of similar demographics with with both towns, both in the generally the same part of the state, but like you pointed out earlier, the overall environment is different. Coastal environment and you know, transportation sectors like 95, the Merritt, the railroad, population density, you know, proximity to transportation sources, and you know, it's 65,000 versus a 25,000 population town.
Mm-hmm.
Dramatically different, as you can imagine. But then you know, you could bring in the topography and habitat differences, and development pressures too. So,
yeah.
Which I think is really the largest factor affecting inland wetlands and watercourses. Obviously, if you have a higher population density and higher demands for housing and development pressures, those are placed on natural resources like inland wetlands and watercourses, as well as, you know, other things like forests and other habitats. But as a regulator on the board in Ridgefield and a regulator as staff in Fairfield, I see a lot of similarities.
Mm.
And really, a lot of those are related to development pressure.
Oh, okay.
The applications we review as I review as either staff or board member, really are trying to find a way to compromise on the applicant's desires, whether that be a single family house, an apartment building, an 830G application, which is a whole nother level of pressure.
Sure.
Health.
Well, we could do a whole hour on that.
Yeah, I'm sure. They are similar in both towns, and that's really how do we, as staff or board, permit that type of development or that type of regulated activity by regulation, sensibly and with the natural resources at the forefront of our purview, while allowing that activity to occur. You know, there's so many different ways to approach that, and it's really the challenge and the fun part for me to make that happen. And I don't want to say finding middle ground, but it is somewhat of a compromise of, hey, maybe if you you know, just move this 20 feet to the left, or maybe if you plant this type of buffer with native plants, manage the stormwater differently. Remove a few units or less impervious surfaces, things like that, that really change the application from what it started with when it first came in to where it ends.
Mm.
I think that the applicant ends up pretty much getting the, you know, their end goal for development, and the town and the natural resources remain protected.
It's, yeah,
you know,
the requisite bang for the buck is preserved, but at the same time, you know, as you mentioned, for something as minimalist as a slight shift of a project footprint could make all the difference in the world and make it 100% or some significant percentage more environmentally friendly and sustainable. So that's great. Your organization has just released its annual report. And I understand there are, a few points of good news and maybe some challenges that you wanted to make sure we cover before we say farewell for now.
Yeah, there are a few. And those, I first, would also like to thank the other council members for their hard work, assembling this and definitely our staff. It's a huge collection, and I think amazing collection of data and production of data, through this publication, since the council's been monitoring and publishing this data for decades. It's really such a comprehensive document. I'm honored to be a part of it, but want to make sure that staff and other council gets that recognition. I think that overall the council sort of flies under the radar. I don't think we're as recognized as outside of the environmental kind of sector.
Yeah.
By others, and I hope that we gain some more recognition and kind of I don't want to say notoriety, but get to spread this information.
Yeah, get the
through more channels.
A little bit more in the public eye, because then you get the public engagement, and out of the engagement comes consensus, and that consensus builds support for moving in the right direction.
Exactly, yeah. And we work, I would say, pretty well with a lot of the members of the General Assembly and leadership in the administration. So, we'll continue to do that, yeah, to make strides forward in our state's environment. But good news that came out of the report, just to highlight, on the natural resources side, personally, we've documented that populations of bald eagles, piping plovers, and ospreys have increased over the last few decades, which is great news. Overall, finfish diversity in Long Island Sound remains pretty high. There were less sewer overflows and better controls of stormwater runoff going into Long Island Sound from wastewater treatment facilities. The hypoxia in Long Island Sound during the summer has declined, largely due to nitrogen reductions and improvements to those wastewater treatment facilities. Mm. And for those that don't know what hypoxia is, it's a reduction of dissolved oxygen, typically less than 3 milligrams per liter. So there's a lot of sources that cause hypoxia, but there's also a lot of factors that negative impacts from hypoxia, lack of oxygen as it relates to algal blooms and available oxygen for living organisms in the water.
Sure. Let me just stop you there, Tim, because I want to make sure folks do engage with CEQ, and that means going to portal.ct.gov/CEQ, and you could scroll right to the publications button right near the top to be able to access the report that that Tim is referring to. Obviously, in 8 or 10 minutes, we can only cover a scant couple of points from it. But you're happy to review it, and I'm sure the council would be happy to entertain correspondence from residents and particularly lending support for issues that have been identified. When it comes to maybe one of the biggest challenges that you're highlighting in the report this year, what would it be, Tim?
I would say a couple things. One, just overall environmental policies coming down from the federal level. I think they present a challenge, and you get the political pressure from them onto the state government, related to fossil fuels and greenhouse gas emissions. I think that's a big challenge and an ongoing challenge, I think, in all states. I would also say that another challenge is finding balance between green solutions to those greenhouse gases as it relates to compromising farmland preservation and forests. So there's been a few matters on the council's agenda as it relates to applications going before the siting council for renewable energy projects, and the council has reviewed them as they relate to potential adverse impacts or compromising things like prime farmland soils, forests, core forests, and you know, I think in a lot of times it's a difficult balance to find there, where your end goal is to reduce greenhouse gas emissions from not using fossil fuels, but rather renewable sources like solar or fuel cells or battery storage. But at the same time, the project is proposing to compromise those prime farmlands or forests by clearing. If you're going to clear forests that are storing carbon just to try and offset it by installation of solar panels, it's a difficult discussion.
Yeah, it's come
up several times, and the council has discussed it in detail.
Yes, the environmental equivalent of biting off one's nose to spite one's face, sort of.
Exactly.
Really a balance. And you did mention that prior to us interviewing this morning, and that was a great observation, because two sides of the coin. You look at people who are all pro green energy and putting solar generation up, collection and generation up anywhere they might be able to do it, might seem like a good idea, until you look at, as you pointed out, the where is the offset if you are reducing the carbon storage capacity of a forested patch in order to provide that long-term acquisition and generation of solar power. So I could see where that really is a tightrope walk.
It is. It's a difficult one. And I think, one of the largest problems we're facing just as a nation and, as a state specifically, is related to climate change, and it's not just talk about storms being more frequent and severe. We've seen that over the last decade or so. When it rains, 2-3 inches an hour, the water has nowhere to go. We have so much impervious surface. But tangentially, it also involves other things like invasive species, both plant and animal. Drought conditions, fires, changes in weather patterns result in poor air quality coming to us from, cities or industrial centers to our west. So it's not just weather specifically related, but there are those other factors that come along with it that are kind of less anticipated, less thought of. As the climate changes, either drier, wetter, warmer, colder, we have habitat changes, we have adaptation changes. 30 years ago, I don't think we were talking as much about great white sharks off the coast as we were now. So, we got ocean pattern changes and circulation temperature changes. It affects, it affects shellfish, it affects bait fish, and now we have the apex predator of the ocean in the Atlantic coming closer to where we are more often. So
sure.
It's just those I don't want to say little things, but side conversations that spin off of climate change as the main is the main discussion.
Yeah, it just occurred to me as I'm thinking of the great white shark as being kind of a metaphor for what global warming is even doing to our economy, because as the great white shark comes, so does the warm waters, and those warm waters have that impact on, particularly on lobsters, our fishing industry, and that is a multi-million dollar, maybe approaching $1 billion economic issue that has impact, and that all kind of reverts back to why the Council on Environmental Quality is so important. And I appreciate the conversation this morning, and I can't wait to talk to you again. I realize you've only been in the position of being director of the Connecticut Council on Environmental Quality for a relatively short time. But as we talk over the coming months and years, hopefully we'll be able to continue digging into some of these subjects. But we're going to leave it there for now. Since 1971, the Connecticut Council on Environmental Quality has been assessing the condition of Connecticut's environment and reporting on its findings, advising other state agencies on environmental impacts of proposed projects, as well as investigating citizens' complaints and allegations of violations of environmental laws. As we have been saying, their new director is Timothy Bishop. He's also with the Fairfield Conservation Department. And we thank you so much, as well as serving his hometown in Ridgefield. So a busy person, and very much a pleasure to have you on the program and chat with you this morning, Tim. Thank you so much. Last word, Tim, before we go, what can the public do to make a difference in regards to perhaps how the CEQ is reporting or working or focusing?
Yeah, absolutely. The council does have a section on our monthly agendas for public comment and public complaint. So I want to make sure that if the public does have environmental concerns that they want to bring to the council's attention, they can reach out to staff through our website and get that on the agenda. And we'd be happy to discuss it with them. It is a public meeting, so the public is welcome to join, listen. And there's participation points there. So
great.
I would encourage that.
Great. Portal.ct.gov/CEQ is the website. Check it out. And hopefully you'll be able to provide a voice in improving Connecticut's environmental sustainability and quality. Thanks again, Tim.
Big color, bigger savings. Sherwin-Williams Super Sale is here. Get 40% off paints and stains June 5th through the 11th with prices starting at $30.89. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.